So Arkady Rinko is back, and he's back in relatively good graces.
Relatively.
I say relatively.
Relatively,
because
yeah.
he runs into a new commissioner, new head prosecutor.
Yes, new city
head prosecutor. With whom he butts heads, of course, which is not unusual for Arkady. I mean, that's been his pattern all along. The last time we saw Arkady, he was on a fishing trawler or a
factory ship.
Yeah. That processes fish, and was pulled out of his enforced retirement to solve a murder on board that ship. Now he is back in Moscow as a special investigator with his own staff, which is kind of unusual. So tell me about that.
Well, I spent some time with the prosecutor's investigator in Moscow for this book, and he described to me how, in fact, he has his own investigators, and they, in fact, take in detectives from the militia, because it's sort of a split system there. The prosecutor's a little bit like our district attorney, and they put a team together to investigate different crimes, and they do it partly, the person in charge is the investigator, and then he has these detectives, and you can pick or choose your detectives there. Who you want to use and who you don't want to use. Quite often you take who you get because you don't think you're going to get anyone better. Arkady has a typical Russian kind of hand in that he plays what he's dealt to some degree, which is there's one detective that he would not necessarily want to use, a man named Minin, a communist of the old school. And then he has Yak, who's Estonian, and probably not a party man at all. And he has Polina, a very forthright pathologist.
She's great.
Yeah, I like her. It's a funny thing.
In fact, she almost takes over the investigation.
Yes, it's extraordinary to me. I had back in Polar Star, remember the character named Natasha, who started taking over that part of the book. These books are in danger of being hijacked by the women who appear in them. And so Polina does make a bid for power there in the beginning of the book. But anyway, he is investigating the death of a black market speculator and banker named Rudy Rosen, whose demise we see in the first few pages of the book. And once again, he runs into the power lines of Moscow, but these are new power lines.
Yeah, everything has changed, hasn't it, since the last time, since the demise of the communist government.
Well, I went there expecting to see a collapse, but it's different. It's a little bit like going. I went up to the Oakland Hills after the fire there, and you think you're prepared for it, but you're not, because walk around Oakland and you see nothing but chimneys, and where there were cars, there are puddles of aluminum. Hardened aluminum. And now to walk around Moscow, you are walking around the remains, the ruins of communist rule, of Soviet rule. And of course it was a sham, of course it was a facade, but when it came down, it really made a mess. And this mess was, it wasn't quite a mess at the point right before the coup when I'm writing, but it was all falling. It was in mid-descent, mid-collapse, at the time that Red Square is set. And so I went expecting that, but I went expecting a more prominent role, a more visible role for the gangs. But I really didn't anticipate not even brazen. It goes beyond brazen. The simple fact of the of the gangs on the street, of the taxi cabs that won't pick up anyone without either cigarettes, vodka, or foreign currency, of the women who knock on your door at the middle of the night, you go to a tourist bar and it's full of racketeers, Russian racketeers. You go into the casinos and find the mafia there. Go into the street and you'll find the black markets. Some of them, of course, a lot of the black markets are simply supplying goods that are unavailable, that should be available in the stores and are not. But a number of the black markets are clearly selling stolen goods. And you'll go to the right street, and you'll find the entire block lined with men selling stolen goods and protected by the police.
This is essentially the setting for Rudy's demise in an explosion in an automobile,
yeah.
A huge black market area where you can buy almost anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Meanwhile, you have a wonderful description on page 80 of Red Square and the almost empty GUM
mm-hmm.
department store.
Yes.
These are really interesting touches, because here, where you can get almost any kind of good in a black market, you go to a department store, you can't get anything.
Yeah. Well, you know, all this stuff that the black market has been diverted from where it was. And there are different ways to divert it. And one way is, of course, to steal it. But a simpler way, and one that is more the norm, is simply to pay somebody, in the government who will ship it your way. So there's this new hand-in-hand relationship between a brazen, organized crime and the caretakers of the old system, because they're operating. You know, they're operating like as if they were officers of a bankrupt company. The company doesn't function anymore. It doesn't make anything. It doesn't produce anything anymore. But it has a great deal of physical assets. It owned much of the country. And what it didn't own directly, what the party did not own directly, it controlled. It controlled everything. So now it's selling off those assets to the highest bidder. Some of those highest bidders are foreign companies. Many of those bidders are also mafias which have the hard currency.
It should be noted that we're not talking about the Sicilian mafia, but
no.
The mafia that...
It's interesting that they call themselves the mafia.
Yeah. They've appropriated the term, but they're distinctly Russian, and they're actually many ethnic Russians, making up various factions of the mafia, as you point out in the book.
I spent a day with a Russian mafioso. He took me for a picnic, I'd already spent a day with him before questioning him, interviewing him about how he did what he did. And he was enormously successful, so we went out in a fleet of Mercedes out to the picnic. And he starts, as one of his underlings starts cooking up the shashlik for the picnic. And shashlik is shish kebab. And it was really, it was like a scene out of one of the Godfather movies, where they're stirring the spaghetti, and every few moments he goes over there and he kicks his underling and to ask how the shashlik is coming along, you know, as if he's a great expert. We're now dealing with a great chef of shashlik, and I question him for a couple of hours, and we eat, and we have some vodka and wine. And then at the end, he has a question for me. And he says he's meeting some guys from New York. And he wants to know how, and he says he's really concerned how to act around these guys, these contacts from New York. And his question is whether the book, The Godfather, is accurate. Whether he can use that as the style that he should assume. So there is this very strange, they see themselves as patterning themselves to some degree. On our own mafia.
Where I think Red Square is an interesting and valuable book is not just because it's a good mystery, but
mm-hmm.
it's one of the few books that really has told us what is happening in the Soviet Union right now. These little slices of life, which are so vivid, for example, Polina standing in line for 2 hours trying to get beets.
Yes.
And looking down and seeing the red juices from the beets mm-hmm. on her feet and mm-hmm. on the ground and so forth. Another interesting story. Apparently, maybe you can amplify this. Apparently, to buy vodka, you have to return the empty.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
You can't buy two bottles.
Well, you know, you got to bring one back for every one you buy. When Gorbachev tried to control the flow of vodka, cut down the production of vodka, he was to some degree successful. But the only thing that restrains, cuts down the production of vodka now is they don't have enough bottles. I mean, because those bottlers can't get their sand, their silly, you know, it's a collapse of supply. God knows there's the demand.
Well, the point and aspect of a Russian tripping, as he approaches the beginning of the line and dropping his bottle. What do you do? Where do you start? What if you want to get your first bottle of vodka? How do you start? How do you get it?
Well, actually, you can buy one on the street from a street vendor. Mm-hmm. You just have to pay four times more. See, I mean, anything, if you have hard currency, you can get anything.
By hard currency, of course, you
foreign, mean... Foreign, but dollars, Deutschmarks, yen. They prefer dollars or Deutschmarks. Mm-hmm. They can do that. Although, what is the rate now? When I went there the first time, the rate was $1.64 to the ruble. Today's rate is 393 rubles to the dollar. That's the official rate.
Now, Arkady's investigation takes him to Germany, to Munich, and to Berlin. You actually went to all these places, didn't you?
Well, it's a funny thing. It's fiction. It's nothing but fiction. But at the same time, I feel much more comfortable seeing the places I'm going to write about and getting it right and believing that anything I write about is possible. Could happen, not necessarily did happen. If I wanted to do that, I would have stayed a reporter. But I went to Munich because there is an Russian emigre community there that I'm very interested in. A number of them are my friends, people who have sort of kept Gorky Park and Polar Star and Red Square accurate by reading the manuscripts for me and telling me when I started to miss something, you know. And then I went to Berlin. I went to Berlin because people said, well, the wall's down. You really ought to see it at least. But I didn't think I was going to use Berlin until I was walking down the central street of what used to be West Berlin, which is the Kudamm. And suddenly I saw some familiar figures ahead. I looked around and, my God, they're Chechens, they're mafiosos from Moscow. And I walked down, and I followed them, and I looked over, and I saw some other mafiosos. And I walked in, I went into a stylish cafe, and some more Chechen mafiosos there. Went that evening, saw a great banquet of mafiosos from Moscow filling a banquet hall in the Kempinski Hotel, you know, the most fashionable hotel in Berlin. Then I started asking about the Germans, what is going on here. And they said they don't know what to do. Suddenly, along with this influx of East Germans and Poles into Berlin, suddenly also arriving on the scene are these mafiosos from Moscow. And they can't do anything about it because they feel they can control or understand or infiltrate German gangs. They don't know what to do with Chechens. Nobody, no German is going to pass as a Chechen. And the Chechens have moved in. They're demanding protection money from the fur salons and the art galleries. It's a bizarre situation. It's a little fallout from the collapse of communism and the fall of the wall that nobody anticipated.
Red Square also marks the return of Arkady's the love of his life. She figured prominently in Gorky Park. But he had never stopped. Tell me a little bit about her and his relationship with her.
Well, you have different motivations for writing a book, and certainly one motivation was to talk about the gangsterization of Moscow. But I've been thinking about what happened to Irina since Gorky Park, and God knows Arkady has been thinking about her nonstop since then, and thought about what she would have done, and what she had been thinking about Arkady Rinko. So I found a life that she might have led, which would have been still involved with Russia to a degree, and found her at a place called Radio Liberty, which is an American institution, in fact. I mean, the American taxpayer pays for it and has always been a counter to the communist threat. In other words, there's Radio Liberty that we've created. Used to be funded and run by the CIA, and for the last 10 years or so has been funded and run by Congress, an oversight group, a committee from Congress. And there's Radio Liberty, which is beamed out of Munich towards towards Russia and the Russian republics. And there's Radio Free Europe, which is beamed, still continues to be beamed, transmitted to Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, etc. And with the fall of the downfall of communism, I was started thinking about what would happen to that place, this great ideological bastion of ours, which was Radio Liberty, and which, incidentally, is the home of a number of my friends. And so I was thinking about what happens to emigres, and Irina, I thought, might be one of those emigres, and might in fact be one of those people who late at night sits before a mic like this and falls back into a Russian mode and her Russian voice and transmits the news of Russia to Russia.
How has the collapse of communism, how did the collapse of communism affect you in going to the Soviet Union, well, the former Soviet Union, and researching Red Square?
Well, I'd been there a couple times at that point. At that point, I was just trying to write the book. I've been chasing after headlines, trying to incorporate everything. It's difficult enough to incorporate a country or a city and put it into a book.
But it should be noted that at one time you were persona non grata.
Yes,
that
a long time.
At Gorky Park, which they apparently saw somehow, unbelievably, as an anti-Soviet book.
Yeah. And so I was banned, my books were banned. But then about four years ago, they decided suddenly that I was an author of Perestroika. And I was allowed back in. Now they want to publish anything with Arkady Renko in it. I don't know where they're going to get the paper, but they say they want to publish it. And they've even paid $1 million to do it, which is, for them, an expression of enormous sincerity.
Can you take those dollars out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I also have a bank account of rubles in Moscow, and when I think about the exchange rate, it's gone. My bank account has gone from dollars to cents.
Well, your first visit to the Soviet Union, you were telling me in one of our earlier interviews that it was difficult to get around. You had to make notes and mm-hmm. make sketches, and they weren't cooperative. You couldn't get into some buildings and things like that.
Yeah, but now I can get it. Now I could get into anything. But it's the degree of cooperation. That degree of cooperation should make someone suspicious. You know, I remember going into. Suddenly, I was whisked up into the Ministry of the Interior, and was doing an interview, supposedly an interview with a general in charge of criminal investigation for the Russian Republic. And I was up there, and we were talking, and he was just giving a speech. And over here were his video cameras taping it. And this was sort of they were videotaping Martin Cruz Smith interviewing General so-and-so. And what, in fact, General so-and-so was doing was delivering a set speech in Russian to me, who understands not a word of Russian. But it was a curious experience. It was something as we see some bureaucrats change, we should check to see whether they're wearing, whether they've done anything more than just change their coats.
When you went there, you had no problem getting around. Where did you stay, by the way?
I stayed at a couple of different places. One time I stayed at the National. One time I stayed at the Savoy, which is a Finnish hotel in Moscow. But I would see these places only at night. Because when you're following a detective, you live by his hours.
Yeah, you actually didn't go out with the cops.
Yeah, so we would go to the different black markets, and when you interview people who lead somewhat illicit lives, you live by their hours too. I mean, whether it's day or night or whatever, you just got to follow them. And sometimes, and it's funny when you do this kind of work because it all sounds. I hope it sounds remotely exciting, but the fact of it is, it's like any stakeout. It's enormously boring because a whole lot of these meetings with mafiosos don't take place, and you're creeping around the undergrowth in some grubby suburb of Moscow, watching some mafioso's house, and he never comes out.
Well,
it's like that kind of stake out anywhere.
But it gave you the opportunity to soak up the atmosphere.
Well, that's what I do. The fact, you know, you talked about how what happened when I used to go there and I didn't understand Russian, and I still don't understand Russian, but I would get lost and wander around. And those were some of the most productive hours, being lost in Moscow. And being when nothing happens. Okay, let's say I go to some place to see this mafioso, I want to see his whole retinue, and I want to see the women he's with. I want to see the car he drives. And this is a particularly hard-to-find guy. But it doesn't happen. He never comes out of the house. Who knows what he's doing there? He's probably sleeping or watching television. So I wander off, and I go into a discount shop. And it's a discount shop that exemplifies the life this man is trying to get out of. Because in a Russian discount shop, they're selling things, you know, forks with one tine. They're selling a light broken light bulbs. You know, I mentioned this in the book, this scene, this discount, this used shop. It's a shop I was in. And it's the reason you sell a broken light bulb, a dead light bulb, is that you buy it, say, for how many kopecks. It's useless, of course. But you don't have it. You can't find light bulbs in the stores. They're not there. You've got to take one from work. But you don't dare have a missing light bulb at work. So you buy the broken one, take it to work, unscrew the good one, put that in your pocket for home, and you screw the busted one into the sock. That's how you get a light bulb. But this, it's this kind of demeaning privation, a demeaning system that fuels a lot of what we call mafiosos, just as it does here.
Martin, you had a relatively productive career as a writer. You wrote a number of novels. You weren't very well known. All of a sudden, Gorky Park became a big success. How has the success of Gorky Park, Polar Star, and Red Square changed your life?
Well, as little as I can change it. I haven't changed wives, haven't changed kids, haven't changed dogs. Did change from an apartment to a house. Can go where I want to. Let's see, actually, still keep my cars a pretty long time, and that's really about it. The one thing is, I can write what I want. I do what I want, and I write what I want, and it's really being a free agent. It's an interesting thing. It's sort of like, you know, you're like this the electron that makes the quantum leap from orbit to orbit, but I can pick the orbit.
What's going to happen to Arkady in the future?
I don't know.
Is he going to play a role in any other book by Martin Carew Smith?
Well, I hope so. But he won't play a part in the next book, which is not going to be Russian at all. It's time for me to spend time, more time with the English language.
How about something on gypsies?
I did that. I'm going to do one set in England, mm-hmm. as a matter of fact. And then I do have some what I think are terrific Russian ideas that nobody seems to be touching, and I might do one of them. And I very likely will use Arkady, but you know, you don't. I feel too much respect in a way for the character to say yes, I'll do that again, because he's not a ventriloquist dummy.
You're not exactly churning out Arkady.
No, I do. No,
yeah,
no. It takes me.
Yeah, you spent a couple of years on Red Square, didn't you?
Yeah, 3 years.
Yeah.
And that's a good pace. That's a good pace. Well, some people write well very quickly. I don't. But I can write pretty well, given enough time.
Are you contracted for additional books with Random House?
As of today, I might be.
Uh-huh. Well, I wish you luck on that.
Thank you.
Red Square takes Arkady ahead, and it's a wonderful book in the tradition of Gorky Park by Martin Carew Smith. Thank you very, very much, Martin.
Thank you, Don.